Thank you very much for coming out to what's our second event in the series of the research colloquia at SLIS this year. My name is Allison Stevak, and I'm a doctoral student with SLIS in elementary education. And I'm very pleased today to be able to welcome Brenda Chawner. She's originally from Edmonton. She's currently on sabbatical at SLIS here at the University of Alberta. Her research interests include the impact of digital publishing on publishers, readers, and libraries, and the ways in which today's technologies promote open forms of communication, including free and open source software and open access to scholarship and research. And she is a senior lecturer in the School of Information Management at the University of Wellington, Victoria University of Wellington, New Zealand. Please join me in welcoming Brenda.
Okay, well, thank you, and thank you all for coming today. You can see the title of my talk on the slide there. I'm going to be talking about a couple of surveys that I did in New Zealand that looked at the ways in which librarians and information managers are using various sort of social media. So before I leap into the talk, let me find out a bit about you. How many of you have a Facebook account? Okay. What about use Twitter? Blog? Okay. What else? Listen to podcasts? Have a Flickr account? Okay. So a lot of you are familiar with the sorts of things I'll be talking about. What about, maybe I'll turn the question around, is there anyone who doesn't do any of those things? A few. Okay. Good. Good. I'm glad. It's always nice to have people with a range of backgrounds in the audience. So, what am I going to be talking about today? Essentially, I want to look at how people's use of these social media is changing. We're obviously, and I suspect most of you will agree, in a time of fairly rapid change with the way in which these technologies are affecting our ability to reach out to people beyond our immediate physical environment. So I'm going to talk about the benefits and drawbacks of using social media, and I'm going to talk about the sorts of issues they raise for individuals and how you manage your online identities. It's not something that we used to think too much about. You know, we didn't have online identities. You had a physical identity, you had a work identity. You didn't have to worry about it. But now we've got these spaces that essentially blend personal and professional and organizational in a single virtual space. So how do you manage that the tension between those sorts of things? Whoops. So I've done a couple of surveys in New Zealand. The first one was done in about February 2007. I was asked to give a talk on how Web2 affects information management, and I decided that although I could talk about what I thought it was doing, it would really help to have some data to talk about how people were using it. So I did an online survey that got 224 responses, and that was really measuring what they were doing then. And last year I decided to do a follow-up survey, again an online survey. It was issued in late June, early July, so a couple of months later. It got 223 responses. I think the similarity in those numbers is more coincidence than anything else. I know that they're not exactly the same group of people, but it shows roughly the sorts of numbers that I get from these surveys in New Zealand. The only other thing I will say is that if you want to get a nice number of responses, sending out the invitation to participate at noon on Friday seems to work really, really well. Because by the end of the first day for the first survey, I had 130 responses. And it was obvious that people like the distraction on a Friday afternoon of taking 10 minutes to fill in a survey. So I will pass that tip on. If you want good results, choose your time carefully. Monday morning is not a good time to issue a survey invitation. What else is there to say about this? So mostly, basically, this presentation comes from those responses. So to give you a sense of who responded, now I guess I should mention that the disclaimer, obviously, this is not a random survey. I issued an invitation to some email lists. So this is people who were interested in the subject and chose to take the time to respond. So probably not generalizable in any real sense, but nonetheless, in terms of who responded, you can see from this, it's people from both surveys, range of ages. I'm not just getting the people who are young and keen on social media. There's still over 5%, nearly 10% who are 56 and older, contrary to the popular wisdom that people that age don't do this stuff. Fair number of younger people, but essentially spread out over all age ranges, which is probably fairly typical of the people who work in the profession in New Zealand. The best explanation we've been able to come up with for the dip in the 36 to 40 is that's when people take time out of the workforce to women in particular in the library professions take time out of the workforce to raise their kids, so they're slightly less representative of people who are working. But by and large, that matches the profile of salary surveys in New Zealand libraries, so I'm confident that despite the invitational and volunteer nature of the responses, it represents the profession fairly well in terms of the ages. In terms of qualifications, I asked the questions differently between the two surveys. My first one, I must have had blinkers on because I only asked about formal traditional bachelor and master's qualifications, and I got some gripes that I didn't ask about diplomas and certificates, so the second one I extended the range. But again, what we see is that reasonably well-educated, a high proportion have a master's degree, which is essentially the base qualification for working in a... most New Zealand libraries are working in a managerial position in a New Zealand library, so again, the probably representative of people who are in more senior positions rather than people who are in library assistant and clerical positions. And to a certain extent, that represents the population I targeted by issuing invitations through mailing lists. They're professionally oriented mailing lists, and those are the kinds of people who responded. So what can I say about these numbers? I'm just giving percentages because that's easiest for this this forum. What we see back in 2007, just 3 years ago, remember, people read blogs. There's a fair amount of awareness of these social media. Hardly anybody didn't read blogs. So less than 10%, 5.4% said I never read blogs. So over half said I read blogs about once a week. But there's a real difference between reading and writing. I asked about do you write, and nearly two-thirds had never actually written anything. They're passive consumers of information. And that was my main conclusion from that survey, was that although there's interest, it's more as a I am consuming rather than I am contributing. Compare this to the results from 2009. There is a change. Even more people are reading blogs once a week, so gone up. The number of people who say they never read has gone down. That's what we'd expect. We now see people who are writing group blogs, so about a fifth of the respondents were participants in some kind of group blog, and the number of people who had never actually written a blog has dropped below half, so blogging has suddenly become something that's pretty mainstream. What I can say is that between those two surveys, Lianza, who is, I guess, our equivalent of the Canadian Library Association, ran some fairly intensive Web 2 training, and they encouraged people to start writing blogs, and so obviously it had an effect. And certainly one of the comments that came out of the early survey was, we need to know more about how to do this. So answer that, we need to do more, and it happens. Looking at social media, social networking in particular, 3 years ago, about a quarter of respondents had a profile on some sort of social networking site. MySpace, Bebo, or Facebook. That was in the heady days of MySpace. Facebook was still, I didn't ask specifically about which one. Bebo was quite popular in New Zealand. I don't think it was as popular in North America. But roughly a quarter of the respondents had some kind of profile. And in terms of their comments, I always like to provide a, do you have any other comments to make in my surveys? And I got essays. Some of the people really had a lot to say about the barriers. That was the strong message that came through. I don't know how to do this. My institution doesn't support me. My institution blocks it. We need training. So the perception in 2007 from the survey was that there was a lot of interest, but people didn't feel comfortable going out and doing it themselves, and the institutions were blocking their access. Compare that to 2009. In just 2 years, we went from a quarter to over three quarters of people having some kind of profile on a social networking site. I asked them, how did their use of social media change? And what you see is that over half said their use had increased significantly, and over a quarter said it had increased. So roughly three quarters of the people said it's going way up. So this is clearly having some kind of impact in terms of what people are doing. And hardly anybody said their use had decreased. So things are moving up there. I also asked about how much of this use was work-related, because one of the things that triggered my interest in doing the second survey was following a couple of New Zealand librarians on Twitter. And they made an interesting contrast. One of them used a library ID. Her name was basically her library. But she used it for a lot of personal communication, so she would have conversations with her family on Twitter about what were they going to eat for dinner tonight from this library identity. And the other one was the exact opposite. She had a personal identity. It was her name, but she used it to promote her library. And a lot of what she tweeted was library related. And I thought, they haven't really thought about this very much. It's obviously in the early days. So one of the things I was quite interested in finding out about in the second survey was how much of this was actually work related and how much was personal. And so what this next slide says is that about one in six said none of this is work related. All of my use is social media. All of my use of social media is personal. But that means that for five out of six, at least some of this was work related. And you can see for about one in six, almost all of their use of social media was work-related. So there's been this big shift in 2 years from, I'm discouraged from using it, my work bans it, to suddenly I am doing this for work-related purposes. And for some people, that was quite a high proportion of their use. So why is this important? Why is this interesting? Well, I think it raises this interesting question of balancing work, professional, institutional, professional, and personal identity in this space. And that went on to some follow-up questions about how many identities do you see yourself as having here. But before I talk about identity, I just want to talk a bit about the benefits and the drawbacks, because I had a set of questions that asked people to identify three benefits and three drawbacks of being in this virtual space and doing things. So, the benefits. Well, I'm sure you could probably come up with most of these yourselves. Feeling more in touch, better networking, increased skills. That was another one. I think this came through. I think these sorts of skills are going to be more important, and by doing this, I'm gaining the skills. I'm more visible. Some of it was clearly about personal benefit. I am developing my brand. Nobody actually used those words, but that did come through in some comments. By being out there, you're creating your own visibility. And I've picked up a few of the catchy phrases that people wrote in. The second one I think is interesting. I can control when I communicate with people this way. I can decide how much time I want to put into it. The third one, it gives my customers an opportunity to see the people behind the scenes, so we're not anonymous anymore. I like that, the last one too, practice putting complex ideas into small text boxes. Those of you who use Twitter know about how frustrating that 140 character limit is sometimes when you need two more. I thought that one was nice. But it's not all glowing. There are some drawbacks. Again, probably pretty obvious, but the data backs this up. The most common drawback, it takes time away from doing things that may be more important. And there's this sense of loss of privacy. By being out there, I can't control who does what with the data I provide. A few people commented on the fact that it's a less rich way of communicating with people, that they feel that they've lost something by not being able to communicate face-to-face. And a number of people commented on the perception that a lot of what's out there is simply trivia. You know, who cares what you had for breakfast? And these are some of the other comments that people raised. Perhaps I'll just highlight the last two. Annoying emails from Facebook. I gave up on Facebook about 6 months ago when I got fed up with the annoying emails that I was getting and decided that I was not getting sufficient benefit. So I did actually delete my own account. But the other issue is the one about once you're out there, once you've put something out there, there is this, people pass on information and they link to it and they push it around. And we are still learning how to negotiate these public-private spaces and what people can pass on and what they can't and who can post photos and so on. So that did come through. So people were clearly aware of the tensions there when you start moving into these spaces. But now I want to talk a bit more about identity. So some pictures. You know, who are you? And you know, here are some pictures that illustrate how people can camouflage or present themselves in different ways. You have to be a New Zealand librarian to appreciate the picture in the upper right-hand corner. Those are senior managers from some of the New Zealand public libraries. There was a dinner at one of the Lianza conferences whose theme was masked ball, and so everyone got to dress up and pretend to be someone else. So if you can recognize them, we know who they are, but the way they're presenting them there is not the way they usually look. And I also, at the time I put this, the original version of this presentation together, a note came through on one of the email discussion lists about a training session, and it said all staff to wear their name badges, please. So, you know, this sense that, you know, you have to identify yourselves. It was for public librarians, and they obviously wanted people to wear their name badges. But in a library context, even the sense of identity is kind of interesting. I know that one of the topics that will get a lot of discussion on the public librarians list is, do your staff wear name badges and how are they identified? So I went poking around on Flickr for some pictures and found this one, which was pretty much what I wanted. Do you identify staff simply by their position? So how does somebody know that a person wandering around a library is a staff member? Do they wear a badge that says, I'm a staff member? Is it because they're physically sitting behind a desk? It's a really controversial topic in reference circles, at least in New Zealand. And this is obviously a British example. It's from Hull. But they've got two approaches. One is obviously there are some generic badges that just tell them what your position is. And then there's the first name. But generally staff are really resistant to wearing badges that have their full names on them. I don't know if that's the case here. I see some nods. Okay. There's this sense that if my name is on there, I've lost my anonymity. People can look me up. They can find me. I'm suddenly, you know, fully named. And so the notion of identity in a library context is actually, there's a lot more to it than we often think about. One library in New Zealand lets staff choose. They can choose to have the first kind, which just lists their position, or they can have their first name, or they can have their full name. And I keep thinking, someday I'm going to go and find out what the spread is across all three and what's the most popular choice. My guess would be that very few people put their full name on. But as soon as you move away from the physical and you've got people being sent email, do you put their full name on? And so, why? You know, there's obviously this sense that it's okay to identify people for purposes of email, but maybe not in the real, in the physical world. So I think that's an interesting question here. And so that was one of the things that I asked, was how do you establish your identity in the physical world if you're doing things for work, or in the virtual world if you're doing things for work-related purposes. And perhaps the only other comment I'll make here about identity is I really like dealing with a known person. And so when I'm interacting with staff at the Victoria Library, I track down the person I want to talk to. I don't use the generic ask a librarian because I don't know who's behind it. And I'm much happier when I've built up some kind of relationship with an individual who knows me and my background and what I'm interested in. So I think it is a question that we maybe need to pay a bit more attention to. So I ask people, how do you create your online identity? How many do you have and how do you create it? And what I found was that just under half, 44%, made a conscious decision to have two, or at least two. One was one that they used for personal stuff, and one was one that they used for professional or work-related things. So they had a conscious separation between those two roles. The next biggest group were the ones who said, I'm me. Why should it make a difference what role I'm in? So they had a single identity, but they essentially used it primarily for personal use. There was another group who said, I have one identity and I use it for both. There was a chunk, 8.4%, who essentially said, I don't want to be visible online. I want to be completely anonymous. I never do anything where I'd be identifiable. That's a bit naive because people can track you down through things like an IP address and perhaps attach you to an organization or an ISP. But essentially, they did their best to remain anonymous. And then there was another group who said, I have so many. I have lots. The most anyone told me about was eight. I still don't quite understand how you manage eight identities, but obviously for this person, it was not a problem.